Hey guys, welcome to a new episode of Movemakers. Today it's going to be a little different. I have been talking on my page or showing pictures on my page about perseverance. And I've had a lot of questions lately about how I've pivoted and how I've persevered through a year of lots of change. And so that's what we're going to talk about today on Movemakers. We're going to talk about how I've pivoted, how I've persevered, and we're going to talk a little bit about our adoptions and a little bit about everything that has to do with persevering. So sit back. I hope you enjoy. It's going to be straight from my heart and can learn about how I've been pivoting and persevering. Hey guys, I'm so excited to be here. And a topic that's been kind of really coming up lately for me and when I'm talking to other people is my ability to pivot and to persevere when things are hard and not going right, or being able to pivot in a business when I see that it needs a change or I need to make a change myself. I'm first going to totally be upfront. I have been sick and I have been coughing, so I'm hoping I can get through this without too much trouble with my voice. Edit out as much coughing as I possibly can, but if you catch something, that's what it is. But the show must go on. So I thought I would start, I could start a very, very long time ago, but I thought for this podcast, I might start on our adoption with Marissa, who is 12 right now and in seventh grade. And you may or may not know that she is adopted from the Philippines, which is a beautiful group of islands. And it is a beautiful country with just really sweet people, and I'll go more into that as I go on. But she was born in the Philippines and in December, and my husband had been working as a nurse and called me one night about, he was working third shift, called me one night about 1 o'clock in the morning and said, "Hey, what do you think about adopting from the Philippines?" And I'm like, "Well, really hadn't thought about that, but okay, if that's what you feel led to do, then sure, why not?" And I was excited because we had been talking about adoption and moving forward with an adoption for quite some time, but just didn't feel led to where. This was before, I'm going to preface this, 2006. So this was before the adoption world got crazy with countries closing and things happening. So this was pre all of that, but like right before. So December of 2006. So we found an agency and we got an attorney in the Philippines because at the time that's what you did. And we were matched with a little girl who was 7 days old in February. Marissa was born February 5th of 2007 and we were matched with her shortly thereafter, which is amazing and great. And we were told that the longest it would take would be 6 months that she would be home. And as much as my mama's heart wanted her home, it understood that things had to happen, laws had to go through, paperwork needed to be done, and it was fine. I could do 6 months of her not being home. We did all of our paperwork, did our home studies, did our fingerprinting, were on our end. The home studies were approved. Everything was moving right along. And then May of 2007 hit. And in May, there was a law that changed. And this is actually one of the laws that really affected the adoption world. And it was the Hague. And it was really put in place to protect children from being trafficked, you know, child trafficking, which is great, but it very much hurt the adoption world. And our paperwork was caught in this limbo of, we started one way, but now the law has changed and we needed to change how we were doing it. And we were told that everything would be fine, that our paperwork would be grandfathered in, and it's going to take a little bit longer, but it's okay. And as a little bit longer, it was like 3 months. So she'd be home by 9 months and life would be grand. We'd have our little girl and we would be living our merry old way, is what we kind of thought. However, I'm going to tell that this did not happen. Her adoption took us 6 years. Yes, I said years, 10 months and 21 days. Our little girl came home in November at almost 6 years old, shy of 3 months of turning six. You can imagine that there was a lot of persevering and a lot of pivoting during this time. And that's kind of where I'm going to start in when people ask, how can you pivot and persevere when things are happening? I'm going to start with this story. And it was funny. I got out a little bit of her memory book that I made, and I have a whole thing on the computer of emails and things I sent back to family. And so I pulled some of them because I really wanted you to hear and understand kind of what was going on during this time. I know a lot of people who have adopted internationally have stopped, have quit. It's a long, hard process. It's not easy. But the first email that I grabbed was September 4th of 2007. And it was to my family. And we had just gotten some news. And so I'm just going to read you what I wrote. I wrote, "Hello to all. I would love to be emailing you to tell you all good news, but such is not the case. We heard last night that again the adoption has run into some major roadblocks and it's not looking good at all. It is because the courts are saying that she was pre-identified and that this could be a baby trafficking case. The U.S. government will not help ICAB, the adoption board, which was fashioned after our DCFS. They will not give us our final approval. All we need is her visa to come home, and we need ICAB to have this done. ICAB has approved us as an adoptable family, and all of our clearances are fine. We need prayers. The ICAB will change their mind, and we will be given clearance, the clearance needed. The God will give us wisdom as to what we should do and if we can find a different way. Also pray for our hearts right now. They are torn into tiny pieces. Just pray that we can go on and keep our heads up and get this all figured out. Please pray for wisdom. We are all in shock and not sure what the next step will be. Right now, it looks as if our only option is to start over with ICAB and try for another child, and then keep trying to get Marissa here in the future. The only peace we do have is that she is in a loving home that is and taken care of no matter what. I will keep you all updated. I still believe that we can move this mountain through prayer. Its power, that prayer, is amazing. So if you can ask your friends to also pray, that would be great. When more than one person comes together in prayer, that is when mountains can be moved. Our God is good and he has given us faith this far to get to this point. I don't believe that we came this far for nothing. Love, Angie." This was written in September of 2007. I told you before that this took 6 years. So you can imagine that if our hearts were breaking in September of 2007, what they must have been like in September of 2008, 9, 10, 11, 12. one thing that I think is funny that I wrote, and it is something that I just posted on my page a few days ago, is that we haven't gotten to this point and gotten to this far to just give up now. And I think that's one of my first things of how do I persevere? How do I keep going in pivot in times that I need to? It's just that. God didn't bring me this far in my life, in my business, in friendships, in relationships, to just bring me this far. There's a reason to keep pushing forward and to keep going. And it's funny how I keep looking back at things that's a message that has just repeated in my life. And so that's probably number one, is I have a faith and I understand that God wants great things for us. And it's not just to leave us hanging. It's to keep going. the next email I wanted to read was from September 13, 2007. And it's again to our family. It's hello to all. I am sure that many of you have been wondering what has been happening since our last request for prayer. Well, the verdict is keep praying. We have good news, and it seems that the government is going to hear our appeal, answer to our prayer. We still need to pray that they okay our appeal. The good news is that we have been guided by ICAB to seek the help of a congressman. We are thinking this may get things done quickly. Ha ha, whatever quick means in adoption. Meanwhile, it looks like we should possibly look for her to come in December or so. I laugh at this because, you know, I always say that God doesn't give us the full story or the full picture because we would be so overwhelmed. And I think of my mama heart during this and I think, oh man, okay, she's going to be home in December. That's going to only make her like 10 months. We're going to be still good. Like, okay, it really is hard. And I should tell you, like, my family had a baby shower for me. I had a nursery all set up. Like, everything was planned and picked for her. And so it's funny because, like, December seemed like so far away. if only the Angie who was writing these email knew. We are fine. That will make her around 10 months old. We are fine with that as long as she gets here. Continue to pray that things are to progress through ICAB and the government to change its mind and finish her paperwork. We thank you for all the continued support and prayers. Jason and I both feel your prayers and they keep us going most days. This process is like a marathon, a very, very long marathon. We are learning that God's timing, although not ours, is perfect. This, I think, is the hardest lesson to learn. We are so blessed to have family and friends that we can turn to for prayers. So I kind of giggle at this young, naive, eyes wide open, heart wide open during the adoption story. But I can hope that you can hear in those two very, very early emails to our family that, again, it was perseverance. It was pivoting. What can we do? How can we make it work? And we just kept going. Now I'm going to fast forward a little bit. I'm not going to take you through all 6 years, 10 months, and 21 days worth of emails and things that I wrote. But I wanted you to hear the early days and what I was saying. The next email was January 18th of 2008. And it was actually one of our family members messaging us and asking us, hey, do you think she's coming home? You know, are you going to send packages for her birthday? Or what are you doing? Like, are you sending her Christmas? Did you send her Christmas? Like, how? What are we doing? And so my reply was that At this time, the date was March 24th. Yes, you read that right. March. This is the final step. Like, we thought she was going for her visa. We were shocked by the date, and we know that many prayers went up for an earlier date, but we were not given one. And that she would be able to fly 7 to 8 days after this date if she got her visa. And I said, as I was talking to my mom today, I sat down to do my devotions. I was so sad and feeling down, but felt God's presence. I opened my devotions and I began to read. It was about joy. I was wondering if I could find joy in this. The verse that it said to read was James 1:1-13. I want to share this with you because in our time of feeling sad that Marissa would not be here for her, on her birthday or for holidays, and that we would have to wait until April to get her home, I read James 1:2-4. Consider it pure joy, my brothers, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith develops perseverance. Perseverance must finish its work so that you find may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. Later on in James 1:12, blessed is the man who perseveres under trial, because when he has stood the test, he will receive the crown of life that God has promised to those who love him. So with all that said, I think at least we see the end. Not only for Marissa coming home, but the end result of the trial, joy, and God's love and promise. Keep praying and need them all. Thank you for continued support. Keep the faith and keep praying, Angie. So, again, when I get asked this question, Angie, how do you pivot? How do you persevere? How do you keep going? You know, it's my faith. It's knowing that although I don't understand the trials, although I don't understand doors closing and having to figure it out, it's okay. It's happening for a reason. It's the much needed growth and change that I need as a person for God to mold me and develop me for who he needs me to be here on earth. And so this was why I wanted to share our adoption story, because when I think of perseverance and pivoting, this is a big story and why I can do it now in business. So that was in January of 2008. In that time, we thought March, and then we thought April, and we kept getting told that she would be. In 2009, we got a phone call one night because, you know, Philippines is on the other side of the world and we're on this side. So it's their day during our night. So we usually were up because of phone calls, but we got a phone call at 3 a.m. in the morning. And this whole time, I should probably say this whole time, Marissa was in a foster home with friends, family that we knew. So like the family lived here and we knew them, and then their family were her foster parents. And we didn't know that they were going through a divorce and that Marissa was kind of in limbo because the mom, the foster mom, didn't want Marissa to be there. And the foster dad really felt responsible to keep her until we could bring her home. And so during this divorce, which we didn't know what was going on, you know, there was trials and tribulations. And so 3 a.m. we get a phone call and it is, you have 7 days to figure out where this child goes, or we're taking her to Mindanao to an orphanage and you'll never see her again. Now, if you know anything about stories and news and dangers, Mindanao is not the safest, and especially for a U.S. citizen. And it's true, if she would have gone to an orphanage, we would have never found her again. And so we did the only thing that we could do is decide that we needed to get on a plane and we needed to go. Now, I should probably also tell you that I have lived in the Midwest in a small little town my entire life, and I have been to Canada, but that was it for being international traveling, and that's not a whole lot. So I got my passport, packed my bags, I kissed my then, which this will go into the story, but we were 3 years in at this point. I kissed my then 11-month-old baby goodbye, my 14-year-old daughter goodbye, and my 12-year-old son goodbye. And I jumped on a 27-hour flight with three layovers in three countries that I didn't speak the language, never been to, didn't know where I was going. And eventually I landed in the Philippines and met up with Marissa's foster dad in a country that was beautiful and scary and everything all at once. To spend 21 days there by myself, just me, with not knowing, would I get a cell phone that actually worked? Would I be able to communicate back at home? Would my internet work? I didn't know. 21 days. Here we go. Ready or not, we're in it. And so for those 21 days, I spent them with Marissa. I just saw and fell even more in love with her than ever before. We went to lots of meetings and communicated with a lot of heads of state and anyone we could have a meeting with. And left that meeting with some little glimpse of hope. But it was a pivot and it needed to be made immediately. And that pivot was, okay, you need to come every 3 months and spend 21 days in country. And this is what you need to do. And I remember getting that news and thinking, oh my gosh, at the time I was teaching and I'm like, okay, we have three kids at home. I'm teaching. Jason's working full time. We can do this. And of course, I just immediately said, okay, if that's what you need, we'll make it happen. Now, I don't know if you've flown internationally, but let me tell you that the tickets aren't cheap. Like, they're pretty expensive. And then hotel and food and everything else to be in country for 21 days. Whew, that's a lot. But there's a pivot and perseverance. And I said, okay, let's do it. So I remember calling my husband and saying, well, this is what we need to do for this step. And he's like, okay, if that's what we need, we'll make it work. Let's just start praying now. And I was in the grocery store in the Philippines right before I left. And our hotel was on the corner, and then a block away was the mall. And they were close enough that I could leave the hotel and have the guard from the hotel watch me walk to the mall. And then the guard at the mall, like, watch me walk into the mall. So that I always had a guard watching me walk. So that was a blessing because I could actually get out of a motel room with a three-year-old. You can imagine 21 days in a motel room with a three-year-old. You kind of go stir crazy. So you're very thankful that you can go to the mall. But I was at the grocery store and I was walking, pushing a cart. And all of a sudden I saw and heard like English and saw like Americans. And they had a little Filipino little boy in their grocery cart. And I remember I kind of like stalked them. Like, I was just following them down the aisles, trying to like randomly, I'm air quoting, you guys can't see it, but randomly bump into them. Like, not make it too noticeable that I've been following them for the last 10 minutes and creep them out, but just like randomly, oh, look, I'm an American with a Filipino in my grocery cart, you know, sitting in my grocery cart, and you are too, so can we talk? And I did randomly, quoted again, air quote again, run into them. And they were actually missionaries there that were running an orphanage. And the little boy that they had, they were in the midst of adopting him. So I quickly was like, oh my goodness, can we sit down and talk? You know, I'd love to talk to you. And they're like, let's go out for coffee and we'll pick you up at your hotel the next morning. You know, when do you leave? And I said, I'm here for 3 more days. And they're like, great. So for the next 3 days, I just fell in love with this family and we did coffee and lunches and everything like that. They pick us up in the from the hotel in their car and they would take me to different places. And it was just amazing how God put them in my life. And for the next 7 trips, they would be an important part of that perseverance and those pivoting. So that's the other thing. Number 2 of why I can persevere and pivot is because God puts certain people in my life that encourage me, that breathe life into me, that pray for me, that come around me and support me like no other. So that's number 2, how I can persevere and pivot so easily. Now, I went home, and can I tell you, as a mama, after spending 21 days with a 3-year-old and having to hand her back, not knowing for sure what was going to happen, was heartbreaking. They literally had to rip her little fingers off my neck and pull her off. I could hear as they were walking across the parking lot, her screaming, "Mama, Mama." It was the next 27 hours on the flight. I just cried. I remember the stewardess coming on the plane and being like, "Are you okay?" I'm like, "I'm fine, I'm fine, I'm fine." And just crying and mourning loss like no other. And knowing that we had to repeat this until she came home. And so we got home, and I got home the day before my youngest first birthday. And so that next day we had to throw a big birthday party, and all the family was coming, and everyone wanted to know, when is Marissa coming home? When is she coming home? And I just wanted to cry. I wanted to just cry and cry and cry. But I just prayed, and I'm like, okay, here's the thing. Here's what we have to do. And again, remember that God put people around me, and that's how I can persevere and pivot so easily. That was exactly that. Like, they just came around us and prayed and supported. And so we started having garage sales. Now, have you ever had a garage sale? They're a lot of work, right? And you usually don't have the large result at the end, but our garage sales were different, because remember those plane tickets? We had to buy one every 3 months, and that meant I had to take time off of work, and I had to travel for 21 days and everything. So we started having garage sales, and the church at the time we were going to, the people would just bring things, donate things for us to sell. And every single time, we took 8 trips. Every single time, that garage sale was exactly what we needed for airline tickets, hotel, and meals for me and Marissa for 21 days. Well, not plane tickets for her, but for 21 days. Like, that's crazy, right? Like, that doesn't happen except for God. So that just, again, is an amazing story. So, making this a little short, because it could be like 18 million hours long of this adoption story. But I ended up taking, my husband took one trip for her 4th birthday. And I ended up taking, out of the 8 trips, the other 7, I guess. Yes. So I remember the last trip that I took, it was in May of 2012. I had to do some math there quick. 2012. And That last trip, I was so hopeful. I kind of fast forward to the story, but we had twice bought plane tickets, and she was supposed to come home. And the one time it was within 11 hours of us leaving, and we were packing, and I get the call that the paperwork was not finished how it should have been. And so this last time that I went, I didn't know it was my last time at the time, but as I was there and we were meeting and everything was happening, and we are now 5 years into it, and I am meeting with, again, heads of states and boards and anyone I could possibly meet with. And the sweet lady from their ICAB, like their, it would be like our DCFS, like their equivalent of it, looked at me and said, "She's never coming home. You need to realize this, and we don't want you to be spending money coming over here all the time with high, high hopes when she's never coming home." And I remember sitting there and thinking, what in the world did I just hear? And you have to remember, I was by myself not even halfway, on the other side of the world. And I was just hearing that our daughter, that we had been pivoting and persevering. But I'm sitting at this table, and I'll never forget, the room was, it was a cafe. The chairs were kind of a wicker, and we were at a long table. And if I close my eyes today, I can still see the room, and I can still see this lady sitting across from me, and trying as gently as she can to tell me that after 5 years, she's still not coming home, and me literally crumbling and just bawling. And my little daughter was sitting next to me and put her hand on me and gave me a hug and said, it's okay, Mama. It's okay, Mama. I'm here. Mama, it's okay. And I remember wiping the tears away and thinking, she has so much strength. I can't even imagine having that much strength in that moment. And so we went back to our hotel room, and I settled her to sleep, and she went to sleep. And I remember calling Jason back at home and just bawling my eyes out for hours, just devastated over 5 years of persevering, of pivoting, of moving forward, of keeping going, and then hearing she's never, never coming home. And so I spent the rest of the days, there was like 3 days left, just loving on her and getting things that she needed, making sure she had the school supplies she needed because we had enrolled her in a private school there, and all the things, because I knew I was leaving, and I knew I was leaving for the last time. And I remember again having to say goodbye to her at the gate, but this time for me, it was different because I didn't know when or if that next trip would ever come. And so as we said goodbye, and I could again hear her cry as they walked away in the parking lot, and I boarded the plane. And I should state, I was severely, severely, severely sick. I had extreme food poisoning, and which didn't help for a 27-hour flight, but that's besides the point. And I remember taking off, looking over Manila, and thinking how amazingly beautiful this country is and how angry and frustrated I am at it at the same time. And I remember landing in Seoul because that was my next, and I was so, so sick. And I went to the lounge for the airline that we flew, and there was a couple there. And the wife came over to me and she's like, "Are you okay?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm just really sick." And I said, "You know, I'm good." And she's like, "Okay, I just wanted to check." And I said, "Oh, what are you traveling for?" And she said, "Oh, we're bringing our baby home from Korea. We've waited 3 years to get him home, and he's coming home with us. And so my husband's just changing his diaper in the bathroom. And so I just saw that you were crying, and I wanted to make sure you're okay." And I'm like, I'm okay. I'm so happy for you. Like, it's so happy." And so for the next 17 hours, God placed me right in their row. And so I got to see this family coming home, and the joys on their faces as they boarded the plane, and as they, you know, did all the things, as my heart inside was shattered. And they were in my flight all the way back to Chicago. And, you know, we went through all the security checks, everything. And I remember walking out the door to fall into my husband's arms, and their family was all there, so excited and celebrating and just welcoming this little boy home. And I remember that I was just spent. I was devastated and I was sad and I was so happy for them. And my heart was broken. But I remember one thing, that God never gives you more than you can handle. And the beautifulness of this story was that was a little over a year and a half before Marissa came home. And it was beautiful because I got to see and experience joy that I could have just not been thankful to see. And it was hard, but I was glad that I got to see it. And so for the next year, we had decided as a family that we would support Marissa any way we could, which meant we would send her clothes and, you know, her anything she needed. So schooling, we would continue to pay for. And that's what we decided, that we would get her through no matter what. We'd get her through college. And from college, then she could, you know, make a decision of what she wanted to do. But we were going to support her through college. And her foster dad at the time said that he would keep her and that she could live with him. And so that's kind of what we had decided. And it's funny in this story because there was one moment that changed that never into a possibility. And so I think that's number three on my perseverance and my ability to pivot, is when you're at your weakest moment, when you're at a never, when you're at I can't go on, how one moment, how one decision that you can make can pivot destiny, that can pivot and change history. And so that one moment has to do with politics, and it has to do with choosing to support one candidate over another candidate and putting a different sign in our yard. Now, I should preface this, and I don't want to get all political or anything like that. My husband had been an elected official for 10 years. We did politics. We helped on campaigns. We still do. We really enjoy politics. But I don't want you to just hear that part, like, oh, politics. I don't want you to hear that part of the story. I want you to hear how one decision, one pivot, one thing changed history for our family and for our little girl. So we chose to put a different sign out. And immediately the next day, we got a call from the candidate that we didn't support. He happened to be a longtime family friend on my husband's side. And someone had called and said, there's a different side out in front of Bauer's house. And he called us and said, hey, we're in town. Do you care if we stop over and meet with you? And my husband looked at me and I said, I don't care, but I'm going to tell you that I'm going to tell him exactly what I think and exactly why I think that. And he goes, I don't doubt you will. And so I can remember they came over to our house and we welcomed them in and they met Maddie for the first time. And we were sitting down talking and all of a sudden he looked at me and he goes, I have to ask. What switched? And so we told him the story and this and that. And we had made several calls to his office and nothing. And he's like, I never got those. I never got that. You should have just called me personally. I never got those. And we were like, man, okay, well, that's what it was. And that was in January. And I'll never forget. It was February 14th and the phone rang. And he said, Angie, I have made contact with some people that are going to help us. And so I'm going to have some people call you. And there's going to be a couple different people who call you. And he gave me their names and the phone numbers that they were going to call me from. And so he said, they're going to start helping you and guiding you through. And I'll be in, you know, I'll check in. And so I remember getting the first phone call and it was someone. And they called me and they're like, okay, we just need to get the background story. We need to know what you've done, what you haven't done, what paperwork, like all the information, right? To figure out that, yes, we were doing this legally. Yes, we had everything done, you know, all the things just to make sure that we weren't doing something bad. And it was funny because as the months progressed, people would make fun of me because I'm like, oh, hold on. The White House is calling me. Or hold on. Congress is calling me. Or hold on. I they would laugh at me. They're like, yeah, right. The White House is calling me. I'm like, no, really, it is. and so people would make fun of me. But I'll never forget when this politician, he lost primaries and he called me the next day and he said, Angie, I maybe have been an elected official for a long time, and I know I just lost primaries, but I'm going to tell you that this is the last thing I'm going to be in office. Your daughter is going to be my legacy of all that I did as an elected official. Your daughter coming home is my political legacy. Wow. Right? He had done some amazing things. And at that time, we still didn't know if she was coming home, but that's what she said. And so as time went on and time went on, we had more paperwork and more things to do and more boxes to check and more of everything. But it was a fun, filled, fast-paced year of pivoting and checking the boxes and making sure everything was done. And we received a phone call in September of that year. And they said, she is one step from coming home. She has her visa appointment tomorrow. And then she'll be able to fly home. And I can remember just that night of that visa appointment, not being able to sleep and coming out into our family room. I can remember getting down on my hands and knees, face flat on the ground, just praying. I can remember Jason laying over top of me and we were weeping and praying and crying out to God because this was it. This is either yes or it was a forever no. And I can remember just calling his name and just being flat on the ground crying. And we waited like 3 hours until we got the phone call. And we got the phone call that everything was good. She was approved for her visa and she was indeed coming home. And that she would be coming home in November. Now, you know, you tiptoe around that news, just making sure until you see everything. And we had some things that we had to finish on our end and some money and things like that, which is an amazing story. And remember how I said, like, God will put people in your life when they're supposed to be? We had gotten through all of this, taken second mortgages on our house, done garage sale after garage sale, fundraiser after fundraiser. Like, I can't even tell you the amount of money that was spent. And it all came down to $10,000 that the adoption agency said they needed to be able to get the paperwork finished so she could come home. And I remember saying, are you kidding me? Like, we are just joyful she's coming home. And now we have another hurdle and it's $10,000. We don't have it. There's no more to have. There's nothing left. And I remember we went over to some of our friends' house that night. And they were like, what is going on? You guys should be so excited. Like, it should be like the best time ever. Like, she's coming home. And I remember just breaking down and crying and saying, I know, we should be so excited about this moment. But you'll never believe the next hurdle we have to overcome. And I don't know how we're going to do it. And they looked at me and they said, what? It's been 6 years, 9 months. What hurdle could you not overcome? And I said, we need $10,000. And I'll never forget, the husband looked at me and turned and looked at me and said, that's all? That's all you need? That's it? That's your hurdle? After all of this, that's your hurdle. I'm like, that's it? That's a huge hurdle. Like, I don't even know. And he turned to his wife and he laughed and she threw him their checkbook. And right then and there, he wrote us a check for $10,000. Guys, how do I persevere and how do I pivot? I hope you hear all the perseverance and the pivots in this story. And how in each step, my faith, my belief in God and His grace and His love for me, for His ability to hear my prayers and be where I am, good, bad, indifferent, that He put the people that I needed when I needed them in our paths. When He gave us the strength when we didn't have any more. Guys, that's how I continue to persevere and pivot. I'm happy to say that we just got done celebrating 6 years of Marissa being home. It was so sweet to think that she's been home as long as she hadn't been with us. She is a happy, healthy, amazingly strong 12-year-old. She works harder than anyone I know, and she's had struggles. She's an overcomer. She's sweet and she's gentle, and she is a kid who, no matter what is happening, I always say she's my rainbow and unicorn kid, because she can find the joy in the good and even the worst of times. So seeing her face, knowing her story, knowing her 6 years in the Philippines, knowing her struggles and the things that she endured while she was there, that's another reason why I can persevere and pivot in my business and in my life. God doesn't call us to live a life of just being stagnant and doing the same and everything's going to be great and everything's going to be easy and great job, you're going to do it. Nope. That's not at all what he says. If you remember, I read earlier James 1:12. Blessed is the one who perseveres under trials, because having stood the test, that person will receive the crown of life that the Lord has promised to those he loves. He doesn't say it's going to be perfect and great here, but he does say when we get to heaven, that's it. Look at those rewards. So guys, this is three ways. Maybe it was four. I think it was three ways of how I can persevere and I can pivot. I hope you hear my heart in the story and how in your business, in your life, in what's going on, it might not be 7 trips to a foreign country for a little girl. It could be just trying to pay the bills this month, or trying to get your business to that next level, or heck, even just trying to get your business up to be able to figure out how you're going to be able to do this dream. Maybe apply this story to your life. We were told no and never so many times. It would have been so easy for us to say, yep, we're going to walk away. I'm not going to travel across the whole entire world another time to be in a country where I don't understand the language and I don't understand the food and I don't know where I am or how to get places or even feel safe. Guys, that's still applied here for you. That doesn't mean we just stop. It means we find a way when we think there is no way. We pivot and we change, and then we see, did that work? Okay, maybe we need to pivot again. There's no time to just throw up the white flag and say, I can't do it anymore. I'm done. I've failed. It's nothing. It's never nothing. And it's never a failure that is bad. If you've been following me for a while, you know what I'm going to say. Failure? Congratulations. That means you tried. Guys, I think of all the times we could have said enough. We can't do this to our kids at home. We can't do this to our marriage. We can't do this to our checkbook. We can't do this anymore. But we didn't. And I'm so thankful for it, because as I sit down here in this office, I have a little girl upstairs who's doing her homework, who is creative and loves to draw and paint and just got a solo at our local youth choir. Her talents and her beauty and the way she shines in the world is here for a purpose. Here for her to put her mark on the world. And guys, you are too. You're here to put your mark on this creation that God created. Your mark of what your purpose is here. And that is persevering and pivoting and continuing when there is no more to give. Guys, I hope that you enjoyed this Move Makers. I know it's different than what and how we normally do, but I hope you enjoyed it. And I would love if you could share it with someone that needs to hear this message. If you could subscribe, if you could leave a review. Guys, those are all things that keep this podcast going. And we are so grateful for that. Guys, until we talk again, have a great one, and I can't wait to talk to you next week with a new Movemakers. Have a good one.